Once again, let's welcome Lewis Jordan, Sandra Poindexter, Jimmy Viola. Questions from the audience.
There's one back there.
This one's a little bit silly, actually. I was curious, when you first started and the percussion started and you were doing a Yemanja Ewa thing, Cuban thing, right?
Yes.
How does that tie in, or are you just the opening act?
Well, let's see. We just sketched it out for a little transitional thing, and in rehearsal we just talk about what we hear, what sounds, and the chicare. I'm very close to this instrument. You see, it's my security blanket. I even have it right here. So I just think it's a. I hear this instrument in many different styles of music that I'm privileged and honored to play. And tomorrow is the festival in Salvador Bahia for Yemanja, who is the goddess of the earth and the ocean. And so I wanted to pay honor to her and also to Eshu, who ushers in all new eras, which I think we are very much overdue for. And also the music, this Orisha signifies the opening of doors. So a lot of times when we do a performance, I will bring this instrument because it opens doors wider.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I noticed that you have the music and the poems together. So when you do this, do you write the words and then put the music, or vice versa, or how does that process work? How do you decide that?
I'll take that question. different songs have different histories that way, I would say. For instance, we did Langston Hughes' Democracy or Freedom, Will Not Come Today, This Year and Ever. And there was a particular song, the song that we were sketching out underneath that, it's called Things Have Gotta Change by Cal Massey. And so the spirit of that song, the idea of that song, seemed to match up with the poem. That's actually a poem from. There's a whole Langston. Well, you mentioned Steve. You mentioned Ballad of the Landlord with United Front. We had a whole set that, Democracy was part of that set, and Ballad of the Landlord was part of the set. United Front did. So that was So there's a music of a certain spirit, a certain idea that seemed to match the poem. Okay, that's one. And the last one, when we did the Brett poem, well, there was the poem, and then there was some music to match it. Right before that, we did If I Were King. There was a poem, then music to match it. So it different stories with different pieces.
I was curious about how much of it is rehearsed beforehand, the music interwoven with the poetry, and how much you guys just like to have fun with it and kind of just jam out. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in this one sitting, just in general, overall.
Well, I can answer that a little bit. We did that because this is my first experience working with Lewis in this capacity, which I'm honored to do. I love his music and words, and we did have one rehearsal where we sort of went through the form, practiced some of the music that's created, that was composed, and place it where it belongs, and then just try to go for it when we perform. You know, but it sort of reminds me of when you work with a play. When you do poetry, it's the same thing. You sort of have to lay out the music, and there's segues and all kinds of things that are pre-planned. You know, so yeah, it is rehearsed pretty thoroughly. Yeah, and then we just go for it.
Hmm? Yeah. The main thing I would say in terms of going for it, it's if you, well, since I do music and poetry, I'm, and I've worked with poets. There's a group I'm in where it's, the poets outnumber the musicians. And so anyway, to me, what matters to me is that the poetry is heard. And so musicians, in a way, the musicians can do whatever they want, but if you don't have some sort of structure, some sort of concept, it's very easy for the music to get in the way of the words, or to be sort of music to be carving out some sort of space that has nothing to do with the words. But freedom, spontaneity is always good. And if we were to do the same poems, and let's say the music was completely charted out, to me that would be a different experience.
Still, I think even if it were charted out, it would still be different.
It would be different.
It would still have a different energy or a different way of phrasing, but things always change. You know that old thing about playing the same song twice?
Right.
It changes.
But I guess what I'm thinking is that the poetry would have a different feel.
Yeah.
If you didn't feel like the music had some sort of
connection,
random possibilities in it.
Yeah.
We're here.
Speaking of random possibilities, so this is my first time seeing a violin being used in a jazz ensemble and with poetry in the mix, and I was wondering, what are the difficulties of using like a high-pitched instrument like that? Because I noticed at times, and you did great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But I noticed times I see you, like you're feeling the beat, and I feel like you're looking for a point to jump in at times, and I'm wondering what that's like with an instrument that I think tries to always carve itself out, because it's like a very strong instrument to use.
I think it's just like listening to another musician. You know, if your musician's playing and he's speaking, and you're listening not to think about where you're going to jump in, but to hear, you know, what happens. And that kind of comes in your mind first before you even, enter. But also keeping in mind, too, that you don't, I guess maybe like working with a vocalist or with spoken word, you don't want to get in the way of the words or overwhelm what's happening. But you want to, I think for me, I want to feel what his poetry is saying. And so I try to kind of feel my way along that way, and whatever comes out is just from hearing what he's doing, even the sound of his voice or his phrasing and the meaning of the words, all that takes a place. But all that time, you don't want to think. You don't want to think too much. You just want to react, you know, or respond. Yeah.
Do you think, and this goes for both your violin and for your percussion instruments, do you think that in relation to the words that were being spoken and the history of Hughes, do you think that the violin, I feel, can sound of a sorrowful tone a lot of the times, and I feel that, I don't know if you feel like that might be limiting or beneficial to you as an artist, knowing that kind of expectation from a violin is there for an audience, and then for you, you have a bunch of different instruments that you can choose to use. How do you choose when to use them depending on the words or what you guys already have sketched out? So I have two different questions for two different kinds of instruments. I'm sorry.
Well, you can take that. And I'll tell you about the violin in a minute.
Some of the pieces Lewis and I have recorded on the CD that's here.
Oh, yes. Thank you for
that.
Yes. Our CD is available in the back.
And so that is... So because we went through the process of recording these poems with how many musicians?
There were six of us. Well, actually, six of us on the couple.
So that was an amazing experience. We're almost a year from when we recorded the studio in Oakland last year, mm-hmm. and it came out just to me. I mean, I'm very picky when it comes to stuff that I've recorded, and this recording I love listening to, and we performed some of the poems in the past before, sometimes in a trio, sometimes just as a duo, so with six musicians and arrangements of music. That was very challenging. And so in that case, that, you know, there are more rehearsals involved, and it just, I always end up bringing more voices, more instruments, because I know the poems, and I kind of have an idea of the feeling that I would like to convey, to contribute to the poem. If it's a poem I'm not familiar with, then I just kind of let the instruments guide me. So that's the challenge, is to be really connected, to feel really connected to the words. And in some ways I'm not really thinking, oh, I'm going to play this or I'm going to play that. A lot of times I'm following the instrument's lead or something that initiates some feeling to play this or to play that. All at the same time trying to be sensitive to the poet or vocalist or other musicians. So that to me is it's a lot of freedom, but it's controlled intensity at the same time.
Yeah. And what were you wondering you said about the violin? And
well, I know that it's not a sorrowful instrument and it has a wide range, but I feel like for an audience that doesn't know where you're coming from as an artist or what your influences are, do you think it benefits or limits you to have audiences that might be like, oh, it's a violin, it's going to be classical, or it's going to be like a little sad?
You know, I do so many different things, and they're all connected to whatever I did from childhood to now, which covers a lot of areas, let's say, from jazz, classical, Cuban music. I do mariachi music, old mariachi music, which, with all strings. It's beautiful music. From a couple of states in Mexico. And I think the violin, you know, because it's such a singing instrument. It's a voice. And I think maybe in his historically, it replaced the voice musically, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's something that touches the heartstrings, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I think I appreciate most about the violin is the sound and that connection to that instrument, no matter what kind of music I play. If I have an experience with harmony and sound that I enjoy in rhythm, it's all it takes to enjoy it. And sometimes it's sad stuff, and sometimes it's happy stuff, and sometimes really jamming stuff like with Lewis's music. You know, yeah.
Thank you.
So, there's all kinds of me. It's good stuff.
This is more for Mr. Lewis. What has been challenging about being a performer with your saxophone and then also reciting the poetry?
What was the first, what has been the challenge, did you say?
Yeah, like if there's any challenge with, you know, performing like as a saxophone player, going from the instrument to your voice and using your voice.
Yeah. You mean just like, let's say in the Bird poem, that I'm doing the words, I'm speaking and playing so close together? Is that what you're referring to? I don't know. That probably was a little tricky when I first started doing it. That particular poem I've been doing, I'll tell you, the very first time I played that, even though you didn't ask, there was Clint Eastwood did Bird, the movie Bird, and he had a premiere in Berkeley at the place, the theater that the original theater was, the earlier theater that was on University near Shattuck there. And with the bass player, we did a duet, we did that piece there. You didn't ask. I don't know, going back and forth, you know,
I guess I thought it was cool, so I worked on it. I mean, it is a little tricky, but I don't do it that much, you know, but a little bit goes a long way. I thought you were going to ask another question that I was really looking forward to answering. And so I might answer it anyway, just as if you asked it, if that's okay. Which I thought you were going to ask about the whole idea of doing poetry and music as the same, in the same space, generally. Not in the same song necessarily, but in the same space. And I wanted to answer that question because, you see, there are people, Jimmy is one of them, Sandra is one of them. These, you may not know this, but these are like musicians. Who knows when they started playing? And they're like up here. And they probably started at a young age. I started a little bit not so young. And there were so many musicians around, like whoa, I'll never be there. I'll never be there. But I want to be on the set. You know, I want to be on the set. So how am I going to be on the set? Maybe if I throw a little poetry in there. Just whatever it takes to get on the set. And so then I found out that there's less competition for musicians who are doing poetry than for just musicians or just poets. So.
I never knew that whistle.
Well, you certainly got on the set.
You're so good at it, too.
Did you ever try to do them together, like circular breathing?
He doesn't have a mic, does he? I didn't hear that.
I did have a real question.
You might have blown your opportunity. Oh, you have a mic now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're entitled.
Is it on? First of all, I really enjoy. I've heard Lewis play a few hundred times, and never with a violin.
Well, thank you. You enjoy that. Thank you.
It was really nice.
Thank you. Hear that, Steve?
Yeah. Stay in the Rolodex, right?
Yes. Rolodex. In the phone.
Rolodex, and the phone.
In the phone.
Rolodex, you lost us a whole bunch of people with that Rolodex.
Yeah, Francis.
I've been listening to Lewis for 37 years.
I wonder how many people recognize the end music on Landlord. So what was the name of the poem?
Pregnant.
What was the name of the poem that was so timely? The one that...
Oh, I think I said the title, but I will say it again for you. Okay. Let me look at my notes.
And I was just curious whether you knew it or knew of it. Well, or you stumbled upon it?
Let America be America again.
Yeah.
I think I'd heard it before, you know, maybe years ago. But in preparation for this performance, I...
What's this case? It's a big book.
I thought, you know, it's only fitting that I should... See, maybe there may be some things in here that I've forgotten or never knew that really would be good to bring on the set. And so I ran across that. And so, but I think I'd heard it before, but when I ran across it this time, it was like,
yeah,
that seems like.
You must have just jumped right out.
Yeah.
Maybe you could send it somewhere.
Right.
Do you have any interest in doing
some of Langston's poems, the ones where he actually does the jazz words, the jazz poetry? I think he's like the founding guy of jazz poetry or something. But it's actual words to represent the sounds. Right.
I have some interest in that. I mean, I did one of the ones I did. I threw one into this set that I thought would sort of be in that category. The one that was
The Landlady?
No, let me check my notes. No, the one Love Again Blues. My life ain't nothing but a lot of God knows what. Okay, so that one would have been, that sort of fits into that pattern that he done. Actually, to tell you the truth, a lot of the ones he did with music, I found, I mean, you know, there's a lot of his stuff that's like pretty much A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D. And, you know, in the context of what he was doing, maybe where he's presenting them, that worked. But for here, it just didn't seem like it had the right, you know, didn't have enough spice. For just one setting. So I didn't, you know, I would be, you know, like if I ever do something again for Langston, it would be a different set of poems, I'm sure.
Any other questions from the house? Is a question for the mic.
Oh, is the mic? Mike is acting up.
Yeah, he's better.
Well, we can almost hear everybody without the mic, though.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're trying to record.
It's a recording.
Oh, it's a recording mic. Oh, I see. Oh, I won't say a word till it comes back on. And while we're
now is the time to speak freely.
Oh yeah. And speaking freely, let me remind you that there are still two CDs. They're going. I can't say fast, but there's only two left.
Oh, may I say something about those CDs? May I say something?
Yeah, sure.
Like I said, this is the first time I've ever performed Lewis's work. And of course, when we rehearsed, he gave me a CD to take home. And I get a lot of, you know, from the days getting cassettes and all this stuff when people want you to study their music. But when I heard the CD, I thought, wow, I get to play this. It's really jamming. I really, really love this CD. So if you guys have a chance to get one, you know, take my word for it. You'll love it. It's really swinging. Swinging.
Two people.
Of course, it doesn't have me on it, but
but
it's swinging.
You see, that's the way she gets on the next one.
Yes, exactly.
And when I call her with the recording dates, yeah. I'm hoping not to get a lot of grief about. Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I can make that rehearsal. I don't know.
But I absolutely loved it. I just fell in love with it, especially when I heard the songs that we were going to be working on. You know, it was just fabulous stuff. Yeah, and the message in the poetry is really heavy, heavy stuff.
Are we on? Are we on yet?
I'll ask a question up in this zone so that these mics will pick me up. Langston's 116 today.
Wow.
You know, who else are we listening to? It's that vintage that has that way to speak to us now that comes out of that. You know, whether it's music or orators, you know. And I always feel like Langston and Zernil Hurston are the two that kind of turn to blues and folk rhythms and so forth in their music. And at the time, they kind of took crap for that. And then they're the two, 100 years later, whatever, 75 years later, we're still there. We're still tuning into them, you know, which is very interesting. Wondering about that, you know, like it's always kind of phenomenal that we can speak with someone who came from that world.
Mm. But someone mentioned it a little while ago about, and I don't know, excuse me if I can't remember who said it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Langston was the first poet to work with music, but he obviously did that, and it was significant. And it might have been who he worked with, because he worked with Mingus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
for, I don't know if they did a couple of albums or what, at least one. And obviously Mingus was a seminal figure. So, I mean, the two of them together, so it made it, so it wasn't just like, okay, well, poetry, oh, how about music, just any musician, it was Langston Hughes with Charles Mingus.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have two people at the top of their game. I think this, I'm just as since we brought it up, it's like, I mean, I guess poets can sort of isolate them. I think it's powerful whenever two disciplines interact, I think. That's just power. I think a lot of people respond to that. I know I do, and I think I see it around. I mean, people just appreciate that you know, we're sort of inundated, say, with categories. And then we see, well, a poet and a musician. So, okay, so what do I call this now? Is this music or is it poetry? Well, it's something else. And I think people actually like the opportunity to not to experience something that's not pre-categorized for them.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, that thing about Langston and music and poetry, because when he came out here in 1958, we have this recording that's online and such, you know, one of the first things he says is like, and I'm happy to be here in the place where Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Kenneth Patchen and others started doing music, poetry and jazz, you know, so he credits them, you know, and so I don't know, you know, obviously people were doing some things before those recordings came along and so forth, but, you know. But it's at that time, the late '50s, mid-late '50s.
Mm-hmm. So maybe he was talking about the kind of music, because I'm imagining when the music that they were doing, the poems they were doing with music were, I mean, the music they were working with was maybe a little bit more, I don't know, experimental, but more improvisational than when he first, I think when he first started with poetry with music, he was probably working mainly with just the blues form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Speaking about jazz in that sense, poetry and jazz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking, as a musician, you know, when you listen to poetry, and there is a certain rhythm sometimes, and it is the same as music. It's tones and rhythm. And when I hear people that I sort of match a little bit with as a musician, that's what I'm getting from them, is the music out of the poetry. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I don't consider them separate. Yeah.
Francis, do you have a question?
He's looks like he's contemplating.
My first question is, how much did you talk about United Front in the beginning?
Teeny bit.
I think it'd be great to hear a little bit more about United Front, or as far as I guess my thinking is just like, okay, I've heard Ballad of the Landlord. I think I heard that in 1982. Does that sound right?
Good a bit. Well, we record that album at Live in Berlin. That was 82. Recorded in 82.
Right.
So we would have had the piece before we went over there.
Right, so maybe even 1981. Because I remember hearing like that at performances in 1981.
Yeah.
Wow.
At the Scarab or something like that.
At the Scarab. Oh, man. That's deep knowledge.
So I guess, you know, it's like, I'm just wondering, like, maybe you can just talk or reflect on, you know, doing a piece for that many years, and you know, whether, you know, yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't never really thought about it. So that would mean that's like 35, 36 years,
wow,
at least.
Well, saying, there was this guy, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, well, that, I don't know why you would bring that. reflect on that, how it feels to do a piece that long over that length of time.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like you've done this piece over four decades, right? So
okay.
So, you know, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah. Well, Well, it's interesting. So I guess what happened, I don't know if we started doing Battle of the Landlord and then we built a set around it or what. I really don't know. But at a certain point, I had to back it up a little bit. My situation, I explained about doing poetry and music, it helped me stay on the set. But when I first was working with early groups I was working with, I didn't bring my own poetry into it. I thought poetry was a good addition to the music presentation, performance, because I think that for some folks, it actually broke down the walls and let them, enable them to hear the improvisational music more open. You know, some people, because we were a little avant-garde, I guess, and some people just, like, where are they coming from? You know, then you hear a poem and it's like, oh, well, okay, and they could listen. So anyway, I would introduce some poems and we were doing it. And then at some point, I guess, let's do a Langston Hughes set. So there was a whole set we had. There's about a 20, 25 minute set we had that we did it for a while. And so what it's like now, forget the history, it's very interesting. A piece that that people like decades later. Like, it's interesting. I don't know what else to say about it.
I think you did that poem, and then there was this other piece called "No Visible Means of Support."
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Is that another Langston piece?
No, that's not. That's an instrumental piece.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting at the time because of the whole thing about the welfare, and then you did the Valden Landmark.
Oh, really? Okay. Hey, your memory's pretty good, Francis. I need to sit with you and.
Well, we just don't have these opportunities, you know. But I think it's in terms of, you know, this stuff goes way back, you know.
That's interesting that we would have paired those. That could make sense. The Ballad of the Landlord, the No Visible Means was instrumental, but it came from, I don't know if you know the story, but I was.
That was your own experience, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I was living with a woman, not in wedlock, and the landlord. That's where it came in. The landlord was like, he didn't know if he liked me. Mm-hmm. Which he said to the woman who actually had rented the house, the apartment. It's like he wasn't sure about me because I had no visible means of support.
Mm-hmm. And well, that's the thing that they used to say.
Right.
I mean, that was code, right?
I guess it was. It didn't sound right. It wasn't enough. Anyway, it stuck with me. So, no visible means, right? Well, I tell you what, okay, I'm getting more focused now on just Battle of the Landlord. I think it is interesting that people respond to it. Because in a way, I think when I was first doing it, it was like, okay, I like the poem and, you know, we put the music to it and I don't remember that process, but it sounded good to us. I liked it. But in a way, it seems like sort of like an old piece. It's about another time, certain, you know, some of the language and some of the setting of it. And but people still respond to it. So I think people respond to it not really as people can still sort of hear it as a contemporary situation. It's not, you know, it's not just a historical item, but so that part has actually been interesting to me over the years, that people hear, know that it's written from an older time but still related to contemporary situation.
Yeah, we still don't love the landlord.
No, and the landlord still the same, doesn't sense. Love us.
The little rent one, that's a separate piece, right?
Yes, that's right. One of his shorter poems. I actually thought it was his shortest poem, but when I did my research, I found one shorter than that. I wish the rent was heaven sent, and I should have marked a shorter one, but it's a shorter one.
That's it. Thank you so much.